S-A-B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby!
Shimma, shimma! Shimma, shimma! Shimma, shimma!
Let me in!
Shimma, shimma!
I wanna be closer to you!
Shimma, shimma!
Open up your soul!
Shimma, shimma!
Let me find that part of you! The part that nobody ever knew!
Let me touch your mind!
Oh! Why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind!
Hello! Welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. I know so many people who do things that you would enjoy, and today I have several of them on, but we're going to start you off with a very lovely treat. This is a tall drink of water that is an amazing singer, an amazing musician. I'd like to welcome Nikki Arias. Hello.
Hello, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much. Enjoying the holiday.
Excellent. Oh, then thank you for taking a little bit of time out to grace us with your genius. So before we get into like your bands and all of that, when did you first decide that you wanted to be a performer?
Oh, goodness. Probably in the mid-80s or so.
When you were like three?
My family had just gotten MTV, you know, so we were starting to watch videos and stuff. And I've always been in love with music ever since before I even knew, you know, how to talk about it in a kind of cognitive way.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be a musician. I was always in love with bass and drums. So I started with drums. And so I played that for a couple of years. But yeah, since I was in the, you know, maybe 9, 10, 11, 12-ish.
Now, were you in the house? You said you started with drums. Did you start with drums at your house where your parents live?
No, high school. I actually had never even seen a musical instrument in person.
Really?
Until I was in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. So first day of, I showed up to music class not knowing anything at all. And I said, hey, I'm here to learn how to play drums. And they were like, oh, you kind of have to already know how to play drums because it's high school. And I said, well, this is school, so you're going to teach me.
Oh,
and
I like that.
Yeah, and like within a few months, I was already playing drums in the jazz band, and I took to it really easily and quickly.
So not having seen any instruments, what made you decide on the drum and not, say, a bassoon or a guitar or a piano or harmonica, you know? Tuba.
Yeah, well, I owe my entire musical career probably to The Cure. They have been my favorite band since I was a wee child. And it was the video for Just Like Heaven, which came out in, you know, 1987.
Uh-huh.
And there was a part where the camera pans behind the drummer and shows sort of the mechanics of what he's doing. And I was immediately completely fascinated by that. And that's actually, I learned how to sort of air drum just by following that example long before I ever touched a real drum set.
Wow. So,
yeah.
So what was it? Was it about just seeing how it worked, or what was it about that sparked your curiosity?
Yeah, it was seeing the mechanics of it. It was seeing exactly kind of how it worked. And Boris Williams, who was the drummer of The Cure at the time, he had a bit of an unusual way of playing where he had the hi-hat normally lives to the left of the snare drum. So people cross arms, right? So they'll hit the hi-hat with the right hand and hit the snare with the left hand. So they cross arms a bit. But the way he was playing, he had the hi-hat on the right side. So he was open. So his right arm was on the right side. And I don't know, that for me just immediately just caught my attention. And that is actually how I played drums for a long time. I would always switch the hi-hat or have an additional hi-hat on the right-hand side, because there's some things you kind of do need it on the left-hand side for. But Mostly that's how I played.
Okay. All right. So your inspiration is the cure. You roll up to class. You're like, you're teaching me drums. They say, okay. And then, so then where do you go from there? Are you just playing drums in class, or do you have like one of those garage bands?
No, I played drums in class and in the jazz band for like maybe a year or more. And then at some point, Mark Peabody, who was my music teacher at the time in Centerville High School, mm-hmm. go dog, he's like, we need trombones. And I was like, okay. So I switched to trombone, and then I played trombone for a while.
What?
And then I actually did play the bassoon for like a minute, but there are so many keys. There's so many keys on a bassoon that I was uh-huh. like, I just can't do this thing. But I played a little bit of flute, a little bit of kind of like a, just enough to get me by, just enough to get the job done. But wow. I was never really good at any of it. But I can play like 12 different instruments, just enough.
Yeah, that's like me in foreign languages. I can barely get by, just barely, you know, by the skin of my teeth. But, you know,
barest of fluencies, yes.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if I practice. But I love the fact that you were just like in the room and I was like, okay, we need this instrument. Sure, no prob. That's kind of punk rock. That's what I love about that, is that you're just willing, you don't care. It's going to be great no matter what. And you had a good time.
Yeah.
So did you join
senior year, I recall us doing Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, which is one of my favorite classical pieces of music. Uh-huh. And in that thing, I played the euphonium, I played the baritone horn, I played the bassoon, the timpani, the chimes, I played flute. I mean, everything, every little thing that needed playing, I played for that piece.
So what's a euphonium or euphonium? What is that?
Euphonium is like a little tiny, not tiny, but relatively speaking, tiny tuba.
Oh, is it?
Basically, it's a small tuba. It's a three-vowel tuba, basically, but it's small.
Oh, there's such a thing as a small tuba?
Yeah, and there's also a baritone, which is also kind of a tuba, but it points upwards. Yeah, there's all kinds. The brass family of instruments is vast and fascinating.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna put a pin in that, and I might have to ask you about that later on. But so you're playing all of these instruments, and then you go out into the real world, and what instrument do you settle on for your first performance? In, you know, as a paid musician?
Well, in the 90s, if you remember, there was like a ska resurgence in the 90s of ska and swing, luckily, because there wasn't a lot for a trombone player to do outside of an orchestra.
Uh-huh.
So I was in several different ska bands. And
as a trombone player?
Yeah, I went on tour and did the whole business. So I played trombone for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, and then did the thing where I kind of got a little burnt out and I wanted a day job, you know, so I could afford things like, you know, food and rent.
Uh-huh.
And so I kind of gave it up. I still have my trombone, but I haven't touched it in 25 years. And did the job thing, and I started doing lots of musical theater and stuff like that, because now I had my nights and weekends free. And then I decided that I wanted to play bass, and I just switched to bass. And then I've been playing bass ever since.
And, you know, there's something about the bass player in every band, you know, that like everybody goes for them, you know, especially like a lady bass player, because they're usually just standing there so stoic, just playing it out like, yeah, I could be doing something else right now, but I deign to do this.
Oh, no, I get full on ugly face into it. Like, I have loved the bass, but I didn't know this, but one of the first things I was able to sing along or hum to was always a bass line.
Ah.
I would recall maybe like the bass line for, you remember that show, Barney Miller?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that had an incredible bass line. I was obsessed with it as a child. There was also Taste of Honey, Oogie Oogie Boogie,
yeah.
Oogie Boogie Oogie.
Boogie Oogie Oogie,
incredible bass line.
Yeah.
Janice Marie Johnson, also a female bassist, who is incredible.
Uh-huh. So are you a Graham Central Station fan? With Larry Graham?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that. I more now, so also that I'm in my 50s now, I kind of really appreciate late 60s, Motown soul and 70s music way more than I did
when
I was younger.
So let's fast forward. So now, what instrument are you playing currently, or instruments, plural? I don't know what your deal is. What are you playing? In what band? What kind of music?
Okay. So I play bass mostly. I've been doing that for the past 20-something years.
Okay.
And I started off, surprise, surprise, in a Cure tribute band. So a friend of mine approached me about starting a Cure tribute band, and I was like, I'll play bass, and, you know, not ever having played bass. But, you know, drums and bass were my thing, so I was
okay.
like, I can learn this.
Uh-huh.
And I did, and it took a while for me to find the right instrument, because basses come in different sizes, and, you know, I didn't know that back then. So
I learned that
today. I
struggled
with a standard size bass, switch to a short scale bass, which are just kind of more guitar sized basses.
Uh-huh.
And found that I had much easier time with a short scale bass. And then I experimented, and I played in this Cure tribute band for a long time. And then after a while, I kind of wanted to expand my repertoire a bit, you know.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine and I had gone to see the Pixies, and we both love the Pixies, and he's a great guitar player, my friend Rodney Horihata.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of looked at each other. We're like, Pixies tribute band? Yes. So, yeah, that's kind of just the genesis of it. And they have already a female bass player, so it kind of made a little bit more sense, you know, as a tribute band. Because,
right.
you know, there's cover bands, and then there's tribute bands, and those are two different things.
What's the difference?
Well, the cover band would say is a band that would play either many different bands that kind of are in a similar genre, or they would play a version of a type, so like punk versions of Frank Sinatra songs,
mm-hmm.
right? So those are kind of like covers.
Okay.
A tribute band really tries to give you the experience of a particular band.
Okay,
kind of
try
to transport you to their world, you know?
Thank you for that distinction.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you know, we're much cheaper than going to see the real thing.
Sure,
and it's just fun. And what really kind of brought out the love of tribute bands for me was I went to go see a Police tribute band, and I didn't really realize how much I loved the Police
mm-hmm.
until I saw Stung, and that's the name of the tribute band
uh-huh.
called Stung,
uh-huh.
And, you know, especially with bands who are no longer around or bands you never got to experience in real life,
this
is the next best thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And I saw these guys, and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize how much I loved the Police. But, like, they played 30-something songs, and I knew every song and danced like crazy. And then I went and I bought everything by the Police, right?
So yes.
It's a positive feedback loop where, yeah, you know, the Pixies are still around, but maybe you kind of forgot how much you like this band, and we're
mm-hmm.
here to remind you
mm-hmm.
and then go show them love, you know, because we're not trying to make money off of this. We're just kind of
enjoying it. Yeah.
And yeah. Just, we're just sharing the love that we have for this very quirky band.
So what's the name of your band?
So the name of my band is Debased.
Oh, okay.
They have a song called Debaser, which is the first song off their, brilliant Doolittle album that came out in 1989.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so we're Debased, and we're technically Debased, a Pixies tribute. So it leaves no ambiguity.
Got it.
As to what we do and who we are.
Uh-huh.
So that's our full name, Debased, a Pixies tribute. And we're on all the socials. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Blue Sky. Come find us, please. And yeah, and it's me and Bill and Damon and Nate, and we love the Pixies so much, and it's just a pleasure for us to get to play this music for people every time we play a show.
What's your favorite song from the Pixies to play?
Ooh, to play. There's a couple. There's this very sort of slow, jammy, kind of almost sexy song called Hey, that has a very consistent bass line throughout, but it's very bare bones. Like, it's basically me by myself playing almost the entire song, and people kind of come in a little bit here and there, but it's very exposing, but it's also a really great jam. There's a song called Gouge Away, which is the last song off of Doolittle,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a very, like, you get your, you know, it's, you get your rocks off with that song. It's very, like, you know, aggressive, and you feel like, yeah, when you play that last note, you're just like, I'm a rock star. that one's also super fun. But actually, Here Comes Your Man, which is probably their second biggest hit, maybe behind Monkey Gone to Heaven. It's actually a harder song to play, mm-hmm. but it's that very sort of like rub your head, tap your belly kind of thing where the bass line is very involved, but I'm also singing quite a bit.
Right.
In this song.
Yeah.
So, so it puts me in this kind of a zone because I'm doing two completely different things at the same time. And for some reason, that kind of helps me center myself in a strange way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that one's a lot of fun because it's a challenge. And afterwards, I'm sweating buckets going like, oof, I'm so glad I got through that without, you know, making a huge mistake. So
where does DeBase play?
So we have been actually this year, and believe it or not, I think yesterday was our 10th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
So I think it was May 25th, 2015. We played our first show opening for this charming band, who are a Smith tribute band, mm-hmm. at Slim's, if you remember Slim's.
I do indeed.
That was our very first show 10 years ago. So we've been around for quite a while. We've been through some iterations. We're currently DeBase 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some members kind of roll in and roll out.
Mm-hmm.
But me and Bill, who's my singer, so we go by sort of band names. So like you know, Kim Deal was the bass player, so my name is Nick Deal.
Okay.
And we have Damon, who is Surfer Rosso, and Surfer Rosa is a album of the Pixies. And then we have Crackety Jones as our drummer, and Crackety Jones is a song of
uh-huh.
the Pixies song.
Like
and we thought it was appropriate because, you know, drummers are kind of just like wacky anyway. And Bill Lay, who's our singer, he goes by White Francis. because, you know, Black Francis is the name of
sure.
the Pixies singer. And we thought it was funny because he is African-American. So we thought it would be really funny that his name is White Francis.
Mm-hmm.
And so him and I have been the mainstays. We've been the core two since the beginning because his voice is just perfect. I could not do this band without him. And now I feel that way about Damon, too, who's our guitar player, and Nate, who's just joined us, who is just a bucket of enthusiasm. And his first legitimate show is coming up. So he actually auditioned for us earlier this year and played a gig with us. And we loved him, and he fits in great with the band. So his first real show as a band member is coming up.
And when is that? And where? When and where?
So we are playing Saturday, July 26th at the Ivy Room in Albany. We are middling, so we're the second band
uh-huh.
out of three.
Okay.
And opening for us is this great band called Bang On. And Bang On, they are a cover band, and they cover 90s Britpop. So, you know, Oasis, Stone Roses, Blur, Pulp, you know, those kinds of bands. And they're super fun. Love those guys. Bunch of nice dudes as well. And then headlining is the amazing Temptation, and Temptation is a New Order tribute band, and they have it down so perfectly that you could just close your eyes and you think that you're at a New Order show.
That's
absolutely amazing.
So for people who want to find out more about DeBase, where do they go online?
Most of our information is in our Facebook. We don't have like a proper website or anything, but mm-hmm. Facebook is DeBase, a Pixies tribute. The same on Instagram, we're at DeBase SF, and the same as in Blue Sky. And that's where they can find us, and that's where all our links are, and everything is currently updated. Also, for the gig, they can go to the Ivy Rooms website. Ticket links are already up. This is Saturday, July 26th. If anything, you know, come for us, sure, but do not miss Temptation. These guys are absolutely amazing, and they're just absolute pros. And the Ivy Room is such a lovely spot. And we've played all over the Bay Area. We've played at the Viper Room in L.A., but we like to stay local because, again, we're not trying to make money off someone else's
right.
blood, sweat, and tears. You know, we're just... doing this for peanuts, and we're doing it for fun, and that's pretty much it. I mean, all of my bandmates, they have other bands as well, and they have families and stuff, so, you know, we're just doing this for fun.
Well, with that...
And we love to entertain people.
With that in mind, Nikki Arias, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Marilyn Fowler. Appreciate you.
Oh, no problem. And in honor of Nikki's introduction to music, this, my friends, is The Cure, Just Like Heaven. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. I'm your DJ Marilyn, who's about to touch your mind right now. Well, as y'all know, we San Franciscans, we love our film festivals. You know, you say we're going to have a bunch of movies playing for several days in a row, and we're like, yes, yeah, sign me up. And so this is no exception. The San Francisco scene in terms of indie film is strong. So to talk about the San Francisco Indie Fest, I'd like to welcome Celeste Wong. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. So Celeste, tell us a little bit about the film festival.
Yeah, so this is the 24th San Francisco Documentary Festival. Woo! We call it SF DocFest.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be going on, starting this Thursday, goes May 29th through June 8th. Mm-hmm. So a little over a week of really amazing documentaries, international documentaries, local documentaries, shorts, features, a whole array of amazing topics. So something for everyone.
Yeah, I was looking at the lineup and I saw like you had a whole drag program going on.
Yeah. There's a couple of films that touch upon it. One is, so a little background on me, I'm one of the documentary features programmers on the team. So I only worked on a part of the selection, but mm-hmm. One of the films that's really near and dear to my heart is called Avant Drag.
Mm-hmm.
Avant Drag !! To be exact.
Uh-huh.
It's a film from Greece that showcases 10 amazing drag artists who live in Athens, who are really reclaiming the very like radical political roots of
uh-huh.
drag as an art form.
Uh-huh.
And it's this amazing film that is moving, it's powerful, it's hilarious, of course, very relevant outside of Greece as well, and certainly mm-hmm. here in San Francisco.
Excellent. And then I also noticed that you have something called 25 Cats from Qatar. Please explain.
Yeah. That is not one of the films that I worked on personally, but our mm-hmm. amazing programming team programmed it. So 25 Cats from Qatar, that's playing this Saturday, May 31st at 1 p.m. at the Roxy. And there's going to be filmmakers in attendance, so that will be really great. Yeah, it's about the street cat population in mm-hmm. Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine how delightful that is. And that will be a good one for all of the cat lovers out there. It gets into the, the everything that comes with a feral cat crisis, and animal rescue, and adoption, and the whole journey with some really, really adorable kitties.
So let's talk then about some of the film that you work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So I wanted to kind of highlight a few that are maybe in the same vein as Avant Drag. We kind of had a grouping of films that have to do with like alt cultures,
mm-hmm.
perhaps more offbeat stories. So that was one of them. There's a film called They're Here, which is about people who have had UFO sightings
mm-hmm.
or interactions, experiences with UFOs. So it follows a few people and as they share their journeys. It's a really, actually kind of very beautiful human portrayal
mm-hmm.
Of them and their experiences. And it also has this kind of wonderful mystical otherworldly element to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another wonderful documentary called The Flamingo about a woman, Mary, in her 60s who decided to make a change in her life, and she decided she wanted to learn about BDSM and become a BDSM practitioner in her 60s. And it's amazing, as you can imagine. So definitely want to highlight those, but there's so many other amazing films. Some great Bay Area films as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll shout out Acts of Reparations, which is a really beautiful personal journey from a local filmmaker and who collaborates with a filmmaker based in New York, and a film called Mawash about a singer from Afghanistan who now lives in the East Bay, actually,
mm-hmm.
With her family. She's just has this amazing, amazing life story. So I could go on and on, but...
Well, I'm going to force you to go on and on because I see one that's radio related. It's 40 Watts from Nowhere. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. that's another one that we would definitely categorize in our sort of alt cultures, offbeat subgrouping. It's called 40 Watts from Nowhere, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
That's also going to be playing this Saturday at 9 p.m., May 31st. So it's about a pirate radio station
mm-hmm.
In L.A., in Los Angeles. That one's really exciting. I think that will definitely resonate, hopefully, with your audience, this kind of... very sort of like punk approach to radio.
So how long have you been involved with DocFest?
This is actually my first year with DocFest.
Ah.
I've attended screenings before,
mm-hmm.
I've been a programmer, film festival programmer in the area, so I've known a lot of people that have worked for this festival, but this will be my first time actually as a programmer on staff at the festival, so... It's been going on for 24 years. There are people, my colleagues, who have been a part of it for a very long time, but I'm new.
So where did you program before?
So I've programmed at the Mill Valley Film Festival. I am a programmer at other festivals outside of the Bay Area, so I program for Palm Springs Short Fest, the Chicago International Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta Film Festival, sort of all over the country, kind of. But I'm based in the Bay Area.
Is there a difference between how you would program for documentaries versus feature films or short films?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the documentary films, I think something that SF DocFest does really well is just showcases the huge breadth of it.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, a really compelling story is what speaks to me the most.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to have, you know, the fanciest equipment or the most polished, you know, look. I think the story really comes through. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are certain things that keep me up at night.
Like what?
With our current world. So,
You
know, I think when I'm approaching documentary filmmaking especially, I'm thinking of, what can speak to the moment, you know, speak to the current moment. What do people need to hear and want to hear? And also what else might serve as kind of a reprieve and an escape?
Then how, since feature films usually have people promoting it, but a documentary film, how do you find out about them? Because they generally don't get the kind of release treatment that a feature film would get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a challenging landscape right now. I've been talking to some filmmakers. We have pre-recorded Q&As with them, which you can find on our YouTube channel. And they've all expressed this really challenging moment right now in the film industry to get documentary filmmakers out there, to get them distributed and to get the support behind them to get an audience. So I think that's why festivals are so important, to try to bring an audience to these films and get them seen and out there, even if they don't have distribution yet, but they're still independent.
And how long has it been a challenge? Is it the nature of documentary films that it's hard to get them in places, or is it something that evolved over time that we focus more on entertainment?
I think it's evolved over time. Thankfully, the Bay Area has such a robust documentary film community that there are a lot of outlets there's a lot of support for documentary filmmakers here. But I think industry-wide, on a more basic level right now, it's grown. I think it's gotten a lot harder. You know, I think the pandemic was part of that, just art house cinemas closing, there being, you know, fewer ways to get it out there, and the streaming landscape that just changed everything. So I think it has to do with that. But I'm sure it's a lot of factors.
Then how do you hear about the films, considering that they can't, you know, be out there? Is it word of mouth? Are you actively looking someplace? Yeah. Is there a repository of places where documentarians upload their stuff?
Yeah. So at festivals, we get submissions. So people do specifically submit to San Francisco Doc Fest.
Okay.
But outside of that, there are ways to do research and different organizations that work with filmmakers in the production stage. So organizations that help, you know, either funding or support in other ways for production. That's a good way to kind of know, like, okay, these films are coming down the pipeline. They'll be ready to be seen for festivals, you know, at this time. But other festivals really are the main way. I'm so grateful that we still have a lot of festivals out there. I love to attend as many as I can. And even the ones I don't attend, I like to look through their lineup and just see what's out there.
Well, that brings me to, like, how many films are in the festival? Is it possible to see them all at one time? And if for some reason you can't go to a particular show, is there a way to see it again?
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for that question. It is probably not possible to see them all. Unfortunately, you can see quite a few of them if you want to do, like, block out a whole day or a whole week or however much time you have. Mm-hmm. Of course, I understand people don't always have that amount of time. So a lot of our screenings are at the Roxy. So if you want to, we have a lot on the weekend days. They start earlier. On the weekdays, they start a little bit later. So if you have some time this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, you can plan to spend the whole day at the Roxy and see some great films in a row. But another option, if you do miss out on something that you really wanted to see, we do have a lot of the films available virtually as well. So if you go to our website, which is sfindie.com, and then click on SF Doc Fest, you'll be able to browse the films, of course, and then you can also see which ones are available to watch virtually as well.
Okay, okay. So when does it start again?
It starts May 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up on Thursday, that's our opening day, and then it'll go through June 8th.
Now, I'm a person who likes to have a physical thing to look at because then I can just circle it and post it, and it doesn't fall into the virtual waste bin of my brain. Do you have physical programs?
That is a great question. I'm actually not sure if we have anything physical outside of our website. The best thing to do would probably be to stop by the Roxy, because I think sometimes they have have like a physical calendar. So it might be like built in with their other programming, but that would be my best guess. Yeah.
And then in choosing the lineup this year, was there a film that you came across and you were like, oh, I really hope people come and see? I mean, I know you want them to see all of them, but was there one that's kind of like a sleeper that you're like, oh, I hope people come to see this?
Ooh. Yeah, I guess I'll shout out one of the local films that I mentioned earlier, Mahuash, because she's just this incredible woman who has lived an amazing life, and she's really revered as this the public figure and singer in Afghanistan, and I think that she is really deserving of a great audience who will really resonate with their story, and I think she will be really moved by getting that audience. So I feel like we have this so much amazing history, so many legends living in the Bay Area, and she is one of them, and worthy of being rediscovered, I guess.
Excellent, excellent. And if people want to find out more about the Doc Fest and any other fests that you are helming, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so they can go to sfindie.com. So that's the best, easiest website to go to. It's the same organization that puts on SF Indie Fest, the Green Film Festival, so other film festivals that are based in San Francisco that you know and love. So if you go to sfindie.com, you can see there's a banner that says 24th San Francisco Documentary Festival. From there, it'll take you to like our ticketing page. You can learn more about the films. I would suggest, honestly, just going to a film without knowing that much about it. Some of my best film going experiences are when you just kind of buy a ticket for something, don't know anything going in, and it can really surprise you.
Yeah, I do like to go in blind, because then you aren't bracing yourself for any, you know, things that you think might happen. You just are like, oh, okay, whatever's happening. So that's excellent.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Celeste Wong, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We love our movies, so keep them coming.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, people of Earth. Yeah, the Doc Fest. And there's tons of stuff. I was looking at the things, and there's so many things that you could go out and see. Just go to their website and figure it out. Coming up next, I got a little bit of Miles Davis. And then I pre-recorded my interview with the Librarianistas, because it's Memorial Day, and they want to go out and, you know, eat barbecue and potato salad and watch their uncles get drunk in the park. You know, they want to have a life like normal people. So after Miles Davis, we'll have the pre-recorded interview. And I apologize for the sound quality, but, you know, I am not perfect. Thank you.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. The following interview has been pre-recorded for broadcast in this time.
Normally I have the librarianistas in the studio with me, but they're allowed to be people, so I'm pre-recording this interview just for you. You're so lucky. I'm actually in the library's facilities. It's pretty great, like Valhalla for book persons. Here to talk are my librarianistas du jour, Jess Ouyang and Jen Wu. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hello.
So the first question I have for the both of you is, how did you decide that the library was your calling?
As a kid, I spent all of my free time in libraries. I used to sprawl out on the floor in a patch of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lovely, lovely place to be. I felt really cared for and held, and I got to learn about whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was lovely, and I wanted to be back.
Well, I am a former social worker and used to working with community and wanted to continue working with community. So I got my second degree for my MLIS and became a librarian.
Now, what's an MLIS?
So that's a Master's in Library and Information Science.
All right, so here we are today. You have a lot of stuff spread out in front of me that, because it's radio, you'll never get to know what it is, but it's pretty impressive. So who wants to start?
So I'll start. We're here to talk about Summer Stride, which is our summer learning program from June 1st to August 31st. So on the table, we have lots of Summer Stride swag. But know that Summer Stride is for everyone. Everybody could participate. It's for all ages. And what you need to do is to finish 20 hours of learning, reading, listening, or attending library programs. And this could be kids and adults. If you learn together, that's great. It counts for both caregivers and children. And we're just inviting everybody out to participate this year.
Yeah, and if you're wondering how you can participate, at any local library, you can pick up a paper handout. Our paper handout this year has a map-style activity tracker with a bunch of little dots snaking around a map of San Francisco. Each dot counts for 20 minutes of participation, and once you color in all of the dots, you've completed your 20 hours of learning. On the tracker, we also have a bingo game with prompts that are focused a little bit more on teen and adult activities. Anyone is welcome to participate. Also, if you prefer to participate online, which is our online tracker, and you can track your 20 hours of learning through the Beanstack app or their website. And if you'd like to do that, you can go to sfpl.beanstack.org.
And once you do finish that 20 hours of learning or the bingo card, you can go to your local library and exchange the bingo card or tracker for this either a mini tote inspired by Trader Joe's totes that always sell out. It has our branding on it. It says Summer Stride 2025 with parrots on the front and says read. And then there's another example, our tried and true Summer Stride tote. So that would also have space enough for all the books that you check out at the library.
We're so excited about the mini tote this year. It's about 10 inches by 6 inches, since none of you can see it yet. We're so, so excited. So please stop by to take a look, even if you don't want the mini tote and you want the regular size tote bag. We also want to highlight, we have a monthly raffle throughout the summer, and we're going to be offering prizes for youth and families and adults from local businesses and museums. And you can enter the raffle every day that you visit your local library location. You can fill out a ticket per day. So be sure to stop by and fill out and enter that raffle.
What kind of response do you guys get when you do these summer challenges?
Okay. First response we get, because the art is illustrated by a children's book illustrator,
mm-hmm.
is from the adults. The first reaction is this for me? And yes, it is totally for you. So yes, there's 20 hours of learning with the library, and that could be 20 hours of learning. It looks differently for every person, versus children versus teens. And then the activity bingo card was actually created for adults in mind. So they're very teen and adult-centric activities that you could complete in order to get that coveted tote bag.
Once summer hits, parents are just white-knuckling it till school starts again with their kids. So what other kinds of activities do you have now that the kids are out and the parents want to try to keep them out of trouble?
Every library location is going to have so, so many programs. There might be programs that happen typically in after-school hours in the afternoons. There will be story times in the morning, lots and lots of things. And then we will also have many, many presenters that we're bringing into every library location. And we'll have presenter-led programs for children and families and also for adults. And we will have all of this information listed on our website. We'll have a Summer Stride landing page, and the URL for that is sfpl.org/summerstride.
Okay, so for caregivers with youth, to keep them busy this summer and active and entertained and to keep on learning, we have lunch at the library at Maine Children's Center. So it's our only location that's offering free lunch to youth ages 0 to 18. And this will be at Maine Children's Center from June 10th to August 16th. Mm-hmm. There's no restrictions on income. Anybody, any youth can walk in between the ages of 0 to 18 with their caregiver, of course, and all participate. And this is a partnership with Department of Children, Youth, and their families.
As librarians, because you guys are working with books all the time, it's like almost, I would say, 24/7 books. So do you even have time to read on your own for enjoyment?
As librarians, if we want our own Summer Stride tote, we have to complete 20 hours of learning. So we have many incentives to read for fun and also to participate and get a taste of what everybody else is talking about. We, in the paper tracker, we actually have a list selected by SFUSD librarians and SFPL librarians, and it's split into four age categories, pre-K through second grade, third through fifth, 6th through 8th, and 9th through 12th grades. Those are some standout books we'd like to highlight and emphasize for you. If you're curious, if you're looking for reading material for your own kids, or if you're interested in seeing what the kids are learning these days, I want to recommend that also. There's plenty of stuff in here I'm excited to read this summer, too.
This is the way I go through the list, and this is the way I complete my 20 hours of learning with the library.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely earn my Summer Stride tote.
We've got that going on. What are some other projects that you guys are really excited about that maybe, you know, don't get the love that they need to get?
Yeah, I happen to be a teen librarian, and so I do want to highlight a program we're really, really excited to continue offering. We're in our 9th year of offering a youth internship. Mm-hmm. At the library. We call it Youth Engaged in Library Leadership, or YEL for short. And this summer, we're offering YEL from June 16th to August 3rd. YEL is a paid internship program for rising 11th and 12th graders and graduating seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our interns work collaboratively with librarians and also their co-interns at locations across the city to develop and implement their own intern-led library programs. We call these intern-led programs YEL Presents. So some examples of previous years' intern programs include making your own ice cream,
ooh,
a cat-themed carnival, toy making combined with a screening of Toy Story, an animal-themed craft-a-thon, and lots more. I do want to invite you to come see this year's Interns YEL Presents events. And all of these YEL Presents programs will be in the July at the Library, which is our paper newsletter. And that's available at all library locations. I do want to say one more thing. This year's cohort of YEL interns is closed, but if you're interested in participating in the future, we would love to have you intern with us next year. So if you are interested, I want you to keep an eye out for our applications for next year's YEL intern cycle. The applications usually open in late winter and early spring, and we will post them on the teen page, which is sfpl.org/teens.
I want to back up to the ice cream making. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because ice cream making is not something you would associate with, you know, like, because it's sticky and it's sweet and it's delicious, but it's not something you would associate with having around books. And I actually am interested in learning how to make ice cream.
Yeah, I would have to direct you to those teen interns, but I think what they did is use that library location's patio space.
Ah.
And they were making ice cream in bags, so they got to talk a little bit about how you can keep things cold enough if you make, I think, a double layer insulation situation. And then they had all participants leave with their own handmade ice cream. It was a very cool event.
Very cool, very cool. I was just, there's a show on the radio called Stuff You Should Know. It's a podcast, mm-hmm. and they did ice cream, and then they said you could make ice cream with just plastic bags. I mean, yes. obviously not as ingredients, but mm-hmm. I was just like, and so now, this is amazing. So now you have to top that.
I do. Unfortunately, I do. this year, or for this summer, the library is deeply connected with the parks. So library and parks are a perfect partnership. You know, we're both free, we're accessible to all, and we try to welcome all. So there's a couple of events happening throughout the library system.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have lots of live animals
mm-hmm.
Events, so youth and their caregivers could drop by, see some lizards, see some animals, perhaps pet them if they'd like. And also we have more than a few library days. Library days are where the library goes outside and holds events in our public spaces. So at June 1st, there's a summer stride kickoff at Hawk Creek Farm,
mm-hmm.
and Excelsior library visitors are able to walk to Hawk Creek Farm with a librarian and then participate in activities that are being led by Hawk Creek Farm staff. And Cafe Aloni founders Louis Trevino and I believe Vincent Medina will be there, and they'll give a presentation and talk about their work and what they do. There's going to be also a library day at the Conservatory of Flowers, which will feature Ken Pack, who is a Summer Stride illustrator this year. And he will read aloud the book he illustrated, which is On a Summer Night. And we'll have lots of nature and art activities, and it's an all-ages event. Everybody is welcome out July 26th at Conservatory of Flowers. And a couple more. There will be a hike on July 27th
mm-hmm.
from Visitation Valley to Glen Park Branch via the Crosstown Trail, that trail that goes across the city from one corner to the other. Yes. Marilyn is looking surprised. So one of the visionaries behind the trail will be leading the walk from Visitation Valley winding through to Glen Park Branch.
So I'm intrigued. There's a trail
uh-huh.
that goes across the city.
Yeah.
Tell me where it starts and where it ends, and tell me more about that.
I believe it starts near Candlestick State Park Recreation Center area, and Jess is giving me the thumbs up that's correct. And it goes diagonally through sidewalks and green spaces throughout the city, all the way up to, Jess, can you remember?
Yeah, Crosstown Trail ends at Land's End. So if you do the entire trail, you get to see a lot of the tiled staircases in San Francisco, a lot of beautiful vistas. And it's brought a lot of new hikers to parts of San Francisco they might not have visited before. And Visitation Valley and Glen Park are two library branches that are stops along the way.
And when is that again?
It's July 27th, and they start off at Visitation Valley.
Okay, so we've got making ice cream, petting lizards, walking across the city. The library's got everything. It's amazing. You guys have a lot, so I'm just going to say, what more do you have?
Well, you pointed to, when we first started meeting, you pointed to this bookmark.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lot of books on one side, and they're all One City, One Book selections. So One City, One Book is celebrating their 20th year, and there is a list of books, and there's going to be book clubs at certain libraries focusing on the titles that were featured over the 20 years. And there is a challenge connected to this. If you read all the books, whether past, present, you read them all, check it off. Check off all these books, wonderful books selected, then you might be winning the new selection for One City, One Book for free. And of course, limited supplies, but also the challenge is out there for everybody.
Have you had this kind of challenge before where it's like, here's 20 books, let's see if you can read it? Are there people who will go, aha, a challenge, duel accepted?
We definitely have our library fans. and folks who would not have trouble getting through all of these books. And remember, reading not only is reading physical books or ebooks, but it's also audiobooks. So you could perhaps read them all through audiobooks.
It's very cool. So you look like you're chomping at the bit to tell me something really exciting, so I'm going to let you just run with it.
Oh, I just wanted to add some info about the One City, One Book, Read Them All. And we got asked to ask you to tag yourself on Instagram and tag the library, which is at SF Public Library, so we can see all of your book highlights also.
Ah, incorporating social media, which is traditionally the enemy, but yesterday they're working with you. So that all sounds amazing, and I know that you have a few other programs that you want to tell me about.
Yeah, this year we are very excited to have an LGBTQIA Pride page. The library has had a strong presence at the San Francisco Pride March, and we also have the Hormel Center, which is a premier LGBT center and public library system and noteworthy in the country. And so the LGBTQIA Pride page will have a list of upcoming events and some standout featured book lists I want to highlight for you. So the first is books about pride for kids. And the second is gender identity and expression for kids. I know a lot of kids are curious about gender, and so this book list is a good starting point to support younger people's first conversations about gender and self-expression and identity. We also have a book list about LGBTQIA activism across the world. And then we also have a book list about LGBT San Francisco. So it's a resource guide with materials that focus on the LGBT community in San Francisco today and historically, featuring events and important people to the development of San Francisco as the gay Mecca we know. The URL for this landing page is going to be on.sfpl.org/pride. And then some additional highlights. We will be scheduling drag story hours. They will be reconvening. We've been on a bit of a pause, so please stay tuned. And we will have drag story hour information on that Pride landing page when it's ready to go.
This sounds like June is going to be jam-packed, so that is fantastic. So for people who are just new to the library system and maybe don't know how it works, like kids come in, what's the process if someone's bringing their kid for the first time to try and do or participate in all of the programs?
Yeah, so for kids who are enrolled at SFUSD, they are automatically given a library card. It's part of our program called Scholar Card. So if you know your kid is in SFUSD, it's a great thing to come into the library and ask any of the people at the reference desk to check to see if your kid already has a card. And then they're already able to start borrowing books and using our computers and using our digital resources. And it's a good push to apply for your own library card if you're the adult bringing that kid in.
I would also suggest just going and exploring the local libraries. We have an explorer map, and each location has a special sticker in case you want to open yourself to that challenge this summer. But just go and check in with your children or teen or youth services librarian. We're both youth services librarians. And also there's adult services librarians too to talk to. And tell them what you're interested in, and they'll connect you to what you need.
Excellent. I want to thank you both so much, Jess Ouyang and Jen Wu, for being on the show today. And because it's being broadcast on a Monday and you won't be there, I'm hopefully that you guys are doing exactly what you want to do on Memorial Day. So thank you both so much.
89.5 FM, this is your community radio station, KPOO San Francisco.